This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A man from the U.S. state of Florida with a long criminal history arrested and charged with mailing at least 13 packages containing explosive devices to critics of U.S. President Trump. 56-year-old Cesar Sayoc is being charged with five federal crimes. Speaking at a political rally in the state of North Carolina, President Trump blamed the media for all the negativity surrounding the bomb threats.
We have seen an effort by the media in recent hours to use the sinister actions of one individual to score political points against me and the Republican Party.
FBI Chief Christopher Wray explained how they are identifying Sayoc as their suspect.
They uncovered a latent fingerprint from one of the envelopes containing an IED that had been sent to Congresswoman Maxine Waters. There is also a possible DNA connection between samples collected from pieces of two different IEDs.
The pipe bombs were sent in recent days to former President Barack Obama, as well as other high-ranking and profile Democrats. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said Saturday the murder of Jamal Khashoggi is a diplomatic facility must concern us all.
Within our democratic form of government in the United States, we recognize and President Trump has called for congressional involvement in the matter. Due to the gravity of this situation, I will continue consulting with our President and Secretary of State as they consider the implications of this incident within our broader strategic framework.
The Defense Secretary said that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has already revoked some Saudi visas and will be taking additional measures against the responsible people. Turkish state-run news say that Turkey has asked for extradition of 18 men arrested. This is VOA News. Voters in Afghanistan, southern province of Kandahar, cast ballots Saturday in parliamentary elections that were delayed a week after the assassination of the province's police chief. Security was tight in Kandahar, where major roads were closed for nearly 24 hours before the polls opened to prevent any bomb-carrying vehicles from entering the area. Still, AP correspondent Kathy Gannon says people came out in large numbers and there were lots of long lines.
Afghans are desperate to get rid of the warlords and the corrupt political elite that have really run the country for most of the last 17 years since the fall of the Taliban. So they're standing in line because they're really anxious to see a change. And this is the first parliamentary vote since 2010, actually, because they weren't able to hold them on time in 2015 because of security problems.
Security experts monitoring the polls warned of all more attacks by Taliban, who are trying to resume strict Islamic law after their ouster in 2001. The ashes of Matthew Shepard, whose brutal murder in the 1990s became a rallying cry for gay rights movement, were laid to rest, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Shepard's remains had been kept by his family in Wyoming for 20 years. Authorities say he was killed by two roofing workers who targeted him because he was gay. Reverend Gene Robinson, the first openly gay man elected a bishop in the Episcopal Church, presided over the service. He says things have not changed much in 20 years.
Violence takes lots of forms. And right now, the transgender community is the target.
About Matthew Shepard.
Gently rest in this place. You are safe now.
Robinson remembered all those who have lost their lives to violent acts of hate.
And Matt, welcome home.
Ed Donahue, Washington.
A gunman opened fire at a synagogue in the U.S. city of Pittsburgh Saturday, reportedly killing at least four people, injuring others before being taken into custody. Officials did not immediately confirm a motive for the attack at the synagogue, where dozens of people were understood to be celebrating Shabbat services on the Jewish Sabbath, and which comes with the United States witnessing a sharp spike in anti-Semitic incidents. U.S. television networks reported that at least four people had died, while the local CBS affiliate reported that eight people have been killed. Pittsburgh's Public Safety Department, which includes the police, declared earlier that an active shooter was in the area near the synagogue, urging residents to stay away from that area. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Nobody wants that machine. How can he go further and use the machine? Because everywhere they will tell him to go. We don't want the machine. Nobody will go to vote with that machine.
DRC opposition groups petitioned the Electoral Commission not to use voter machines in the upcoming December polls.
Has nothing to do with the law or whatsoever. This is the politics. They just want to victimize the vice president. And they will say a lot of things. And we actually have cocoon around a lot of other issues.
Malawian ruling party supporters accuse Vice President Saulos Chilima of corruption.
He has said that God spoke to him about a monarchical democracy. We have never heard of that. There is only one democracy. It is the government of the people, by the people, where the people choose their own leaders.
And the people of Eswatini are waiting for a new prime minister. Those stories and more coming up. Nightline Africa. Opposition and civil society groups are calling on the chairman of the Congolese Electoral Commission, or CNE, not to deploy voter machines for the upcoming December 23 general election. At a demonstration in the capital, Kinshasa, Friday, the group said the electoral law prohibits the use of voter machines. Senior political party leaders who presented a petition to officials of the commission say they seek a response from the electoral body soon. For more reaction about the use of the voter machines, I reach Martin Fayulu, presidential candidate for the opposition Dynamic Coalition.
Yes, we were many people, more than 500,000 of Congolese demonstrating against the use of voting machines. We started at the place called Échange de Liberté, and we went all along to the Boulevard Lumumba. And we went to another boulevard, we call it Sendwe, and we reach what we call here Stade de Bastille. After that, a delegation of 15 people, we went to the CENI to deliver that memo, saying to Mr. Nanga and the CENI that they have to remove immediately the voting machine from the incoming election.
The Electoral Commission, or CNE, has said that it is continuing to engage with all political parties to address any of your concerns. So, have you raised this issue with them during an inter-party dialogue with Colonel Enanga, the chairman of CNE?
We had two meetings, I think on the 4th and the 9th of this month. And during those meetings, we told Mr. Enanga that there are prerequisites which are the removal of voting machine in the system and also the cleaning of the electoral voter list. We told him that we cannot proceed ahead if those prerequisites are not fulfilled. That's where we are. Mr. Nanga, I think, is a stubborn guy. He wants to go ahead to violate the Constitution and to violate even CENI's decision, and we told him that he cannot go further. He has to stop because we are abide by the law. The law says that you cannot use the electronic vote, and he should stay on that. Mr. Nanga, he went ahead and he bought the machine. Those machine is not recognized by the electoral law. And those machines he bought, nobody knows why he bought them, because if you see the activities listed in the calendar he issued in November last year, in that calendar, there is nowhere it mentioned the voting machine. But we told him that the people of Congo, they have said that machine has to be withdrew. But Mr. Nanga is... Now, today, what he has seen, that the people of Congo everywhere, they have told him that he cannot organize election in this country
by using those machines.
If he goes ahead with using these voter machines that were bought with Congolese taxpayers' money, what are opposition groups going to do about this? Because he appears that these voter machines will be used in December.
The voting machine cannot be used because the people of Congo, they have said no. He cannot go anywhere and introduce this machine and somebody can come and vote. We have said that we will not let election to take place in this country with those machines. It's not possible because the people have said that no way. Everywhere, they have buried the machine. If you see what happened this morning in Goma, if you saw what happened today here in Kinshasa, nobody wants that machine. How can he go further and use the machine? Because everywhere they will tell him to go. We don't want the machine. Nobody will go to vote with that machine.
You were part of the group that presented the petition. What happens next, and when do you expect the Electoral Commission to respond to the petition?
We went there. We told them that, okay, this is the petition, and we are waiting for their reaction. We'll see on Monday, Tuesday, next week what they will say. But for us, I'm just came back from Pretoria in South Africa, where seven of us, the candidates, the presidential candidates, we were, and we signed an agreement that we are very soon giving the name of our common candidate.
Martin Fayulu is the presidential candidate for the Congolese Opposition Dynamic Coalition. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Supporters of the Malawian ruling Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, have accused Vice President Saulos Chilima of corruption. They say the vice president has not been working yet receives his monthly pay, which they said amounts to corruption. They are calling on him to step down. The vice president has often accused President Arthur Peter Mutharika's government of corruption, which made him resign from the DPP to lead the opposition United Transformation Movement, or UTM, to challenge the president in next year's elections. For reaction about the latest call for the vice president to resign, I read Joseph Chidanti Malunga, spokesperson for the UTM.
You know, the system in Malawi, when we go to the polls, we actually choose the president and the vice president for the Republic of Malawi, not for anybody. Because the reason why they are calling him to resign is the fact that he has formed his own party. So the constitution allows, you know, anyone to associate themselves with any political grouping. I mean, there's nothing unconstitutional there. So to call for him to resign, I think it is not correct. And if they do that, why are they not calling the president to resign? You know, the president and the vice president, both of them were voted alongside each other. So it is not correct to say, okay, this one should resign because he has formed his own party. By the way, the vice president, the immediate boss of the vice president is the president himself. And the president hasn't complained that his vice president is not working. So why do you get people outside who don't know what the duties of vice president are calling for his resignation? It doesn't make sense at all.
Some of the DPP supporters are saying the vice president has been telling Malawians that the administration is corrupt. So they are saying if he is a champion for fighting against corruption, why should he continue to be in office, get paid, yet not do his work? They are actually saying he's engaging in the very act of corruption that he's accusing state institution of engaging in. How do you respond to that?
I mean, do you expect anything good from a DPP supporter? Talk something good about the vice president? The answer is no. These are the things that you expect. This is politics. It has nothing to do with the law or whatsoever. This is the politics. They just want to victimize the vice president. And they'll say a lot of things. And we actually have Kakuni around a lot of other issues. You know, they say this, they say that. We just, you know, there, we watch the situation. We know there are a lot of things that are going to happen. They will say a lot about the vice president. So this is not surprising to us. They will say a lot. As long as it is within the law, we are not shaken. We are not going to be moved with that. will continue doing our work. We want to transform this country from status of poverty to prosperity. That's what we want. We are not, you know, hearing all these things that are saying. We think this is part of, you know, election weather. This is what people will be talking about anyway. So for us as the UTM and, you know, the leadership of Vice President, we are not shaken. We are not going to be intimidated. We watch the situation as it is.
Is the Vice President reporting to work and working with the President as the Constitution demands? And what is the current relationship between the two gentlemen?
We should ask the President that kind of a question. If the President gives him something to do, has he ever refused? The President should give you something to do. Do this, do that. He has an office where there's the staff and all that. If the office of Vice President demands him to be in office, he's going to be in office. But if the President doesn't give him something to do, what is he going to do? He will stay there.
Well, some are saying in the DPP that the Vice President has constructively resigned because he's demonstrated gross insubordination and not showing respect to his boss, the President of the Republic, and that this is an affront to the people of Malawi because he doesn't show the kind of leadership that Malawian children should emulate.
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask me, I will tell you that is not correct. I think there's nothing like what you're saying, because all this that you're hearing is from the people that are not for the Vice President. If you ask me, for example, my view is different. I think there's nothing wrong. He should continue as the Vice President because he was mandated by Constitution to be the Vice President until the next elections. There's nothing wrong. So if the DPP supporters think that he should resign, I don't think that's a way of asking someone to resign. They should wait for the day. When we go to the polls, that's when they should ask him to resign, not now, because that's unconstitutional.
Some are saying the prospect of UTM doesn't look bright because several protest parties or groups have come out in the past and they have fizzled out, and that the only party that could stand a chance of winning could be the MCP, the Malawi Congress Party, and not necessarily Silas Chilima's UTM. Your take?
Far from it, my brother. That's not correct. Right now, UTM has the, you know, the, when you look at the statistics right now, you see that UTM is growing each and every day. There were talks that we're probably not reaching out to the people in the rural areas. But as we talk, we have reached out to the people in the rural areas, and we are growing every day. We believe that the UTM is the only party that stands a chance to win the 2019 elections. It is not correct that the MCP, in fact, UTM, everyone else is fearing UTM. You talk about MCP is fearing UTM. DPP is fearing all the other parties that you can think of are actually fearing UTM. So we think UTM is the only party that can win come the 2019 general election. That's why everybody else is against UTM. That's why you have all these talks against UTM, because they believe that this is the number one enemy now.
Joseph Chitandi Malunga is the spokesperson for the Malawian opposition UTM. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Eswatini is reportedly waiting for a new prime minister. This after King Nswati III told a meeting of the kingdom's people's parliament that he got a visit from angels who approved of the new prime minister he will soon appoint. So far, the king has yet to officially reveal the name of the new minister, although local media reports say that he will make the announcement this weekend. For reaction to the king of the prime minister's announcement, I reached Mario Masuku, leader of the banned political party PUDEMO.
The king is the mouth that speaks all. He's an absolute monarch. Nobody knows who he is going to appoint. However, our worry, and my worry and other people's worries, is that the king has used the people like they are, you know, making nominations and electing a prime minister, which is far from the truth. It is the king that will, after all, say who the prime minister is. And what he has done, I have said that it is unconstitutional, because the Constitution of Swaziland says clearly that the king will appoint a prime minister.
The king told Parliament that he has prayed fervently to God to lead him to choose the right person as the next prime minister. So why are civil society groups and your banned political group, PUDEMO, kicking against this notion of the king calling for divine intervention to help him choose the right prime minister?
Clearly, the people must elect a prime minister themselves. They must elect the House of Assembly and indeed the Senate. However, if the king wants to shift now, he only has to amend the constitution. Prayers or divine intervention are not part of the constitution. The king must not play marbles with the people. It's either he amends the constitution or let the people elect the government.
Some of his supporters are saying he has a direct link to God, and he's said that he's had an angelic vision with angels speaking to him about who the next prime minister will be. Why are you against this?
No, it is clear. whether he speaks to God or whether he prays to God, but things must be done constitutionally. We have said that there should be an amendment of the Constitution based on the Fundamental Bill of Rights, sections 24, 25, and section 79, which will then allow people to democratically elect.
Some of your groups have said that the Constitution itself serves only the interest of the king, and that Parliament is also controlled by the king. Where would you have the necessary groups of people who would pressure the administration to have this constitution amendment amended to ensure more democratic reforms? Groups like yours, no. Podemo, would subscribe to or support?
Yeah, you know, we have said it before that going into this kind of parliament or House of Assembly and Senate will not serve the purpose of a democratic governance. Why? Because even if you say anything in the inside houses of parliament, the king has an overriding ruling on whatever is being said. But the people have always said that this constitution is undemocratic. This constitution still upholds the 1973 decree, which gives power to the king, and political parties are still banned.
But one of the visions he saw that God spoke to him, the king said, of which many people in the kingdom, Eswatinis, believe, is that you are practicing monarchical democracy, and for which they recently went to the polls to elect their choice of people to be in parliament. Isn't this the case?
Well, thank you for that question. I personally was not there when God spoke to the king. I don't think some other people were there when God spoke to the king. We are the people of Eswatini, or whatever name it is. He should speak to us. But now he has said that God spoke to him about the monarchical democracy. We have never heard of that. There is only one democracy. It is the government of the people, by the people, where the people choose their own leaders.
Mario Masuku is the leader of the banned political party Podemo. He spoke with me from the capital in Mbabane. Zimbabwean businesses increasingly want payments to be made in US dollars as an economic meltdown grows worse. The government has printed its own currency called bond notes for the past 2 years, but the bond notes are quickly losing the confidence of the public. For VOA Colombo's Mavunga reports from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Dr. Ahmed Bilal Shah operates a medical center in one of Harare's poorest suburbs. He needs money to keep going, but cash is hard to find.
Let me face the realities of the ground. I'm accepting transfer or bond notes. But the thing is, I have to make some solution of that to buy some US dollar, to buy some medicine to replace my stock. If I will not replace my stock after within a 1 month time, I had to close my surgery. My pharmacy does not accept even card or anything. Neither they are accepting any of bond notes or but they are asking for the US dollar. Now they have their own problems. So this is a question where we are stuck.
Zimbabwe abandoned its own dollar in 2009 after years of hyperinflation. Since then, the country has been without an official currency and relied on US dollars, the British pound, and South African rand to conduct transactions. In the past 3 years, however, all the three currencies have been hard to find, paralyzing the economy and forcing the country to rely on bond notes. Shah says if he cannot get US dollars from his patients who have them, he has to turn to the black market. But that presents problems too. Over the past few days, police have arrested nearly 200 black market currency dealers as the government tries to shut down their thriving but illegal business. But on the black market, a dollar is now worth more than three bond notes. Gift Mugano, an independent economist, says Zimbabwe's economy will get worse unless the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa takes action.
The only thing to do, in my view, is to demonetize the bond note. I was one person who was against the bond note from the word go, and I was very clear. This bond note will depreciate and will create havoc. The impact of the bond note is beyond the size of how much bond note we have. It's about perceptions. You take away confidence. You know, we need to go back to full dollarization where we have US dollar alone in our system. You then attract investors because they have certainty in your currency.
Zimbabwe has struggled to attract investors for nearly 20 years after a steep decline in the economy sparked by the policies of former President Robert Mugabe. President Mnangagwa, who took office after Mugabe resigned under military pressure a year ago, has promised improvements. But so far, Zimbabwe remains stuck in crisis and is facing shortages of not only medicine, but nearly all essential goods. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Reports of land grabbing in Uganda are raising concern as the practice moves in the heavily populated urban areas. Most of the land grabbing is attributed to highly placed people in government. Earlier this month, over 300 families near the capital Kampala were evicted, their houses demolished, and their crops destroyed on the orders of one businessman. Many of the families are now sleeping in tents provided by the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. Charles Mwanguhia Mpaji is the East African Newspaper Bureau Chief. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in Kampala by phone to find out more about the issue of land grabbing.
I think they're not entirely new reports. This has been around for some time, and government has been grappling with how to deal with it. It is a serious problem in the country. There have been a lot of reports from across the country a very long time that well-connected people have been, started acquiring public lands and then they'll evict locals who are on the land. So recently, we have seen one major incident was just in the neighborhood of Kampala here, where more than 1,000 families were removed from a parcel of land. A businessman in Kampala claims to have legally bought and given notice, but the law requires that they are compensated. Then an incident happened in Mukono, prompting, both incidents have prompted the intervention of the president to go there and see how the matter can be resolved. And then another incident in Mubende. Mubende district is about 100 kilometers from Kampala.
You say the president had to intervene, and but there are concerns that government led the way in grabbing land by beginning with public land, allegedly giving it to investors, foreign investors. And later on, it turned out that those foreign investors were not there. The land was taken by well-placed people politically. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. That's been quite a big challenge because government has claimed that it wanted public land to be developed in the larger effort to develop the country. But in some cases, lands that were removed to develop particular projects ended up attracting a lot of controversy because they ended up in the hands of well-connected, as you put it, well-connected individuals, some of them with very close links to government. And so if you look at parcels of land like the former Uganda Broadcasting Corporation land on Nakasero Hill next to the state lodge at Nakasero, which now houses an hotel. You check on another piece of land also that belonged to Shimoni Demonstration School in the heart of Kampala, which was given away. And these were supposed to build, to develop hotels for the Commonwealth Heads of Government Summit that took place in Kampala in 2007. For the one at Shimoni, there is a new building there. There is a promise that a hotel will be part of it, but it's going to be a large shopping mall. The one at Apkololo is being turned into, has a hotel that has been revoked on it. But also other many public lands, especially for schools, for the police, for former Uganda Railways, and others have been given out to private developers.
Since those who are involved are people in government, well-placed people politically, how will this one evolve after some time when maybe there's change of government?
Two things there, Douglas. One is that President Museveni appointed a mission of inquiry headed by a judge of the High Court to investigate land matters. The inquiry was supposed to run for a period of 6 months. That period has been extended. Its mandate has also been significantly expanded because the findings are simply astonishing. The names that keep popping up, the area across the country where complaints keep coming from, and the commission has been running across the country to listen to incidents, to intervene where active evictions are taking place. It's not hard to imagine that if there is a change of government in this country, a lot of revisiting of land acquisitions could take place. But that is only an if. No one can say for certain that is what will happen. But especially for people who have taken over public land, I think there will be, if there was a change of government, you might expect that there will be a lot of revision of who owns what land.
Charles Mwanguhi Mpaji is the East African Newspaper Bureau Chief. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, gunmen have killed a linguistics professor in Cameroon's volatile English-speaking Northwest region. Paul Kuban Mbufong was shot dead Thursday while going to work in the University of Bamenda. University staff say the murder of the academic, who was also in charge of administration, bore the hallmarks of the Amba Boys, or separatists fighting for an independent English-speaking state called Ambazonia. For the latest development in the ongoing crisis, I'm joined live in the studio by Dr. Ebenezer Akwanga, leader of the African People's Liberation Movement, or APLM, a group seeking independence. How are you, Dr. Akwanga?
I'm doing fine.
Wonderful. So let me ask you, what is the latest development of what is happening in what you call the struggle of the independence of Ambazonia?
Well, at the moment, I can say that the struggle seems to have reached a stalemate. A stalemate because you find the different self-defense groups are doing a marvelous job on the ground, but the state of La République du Cameroun has created its own group of, in quote, separatist fighters to cause more chaos, added with those I call the terrorists, who are the soldiers from La République du Cameroun. So there seems to be a stalemate. We are not pushing forward, they are not pushing inward. So both sides are locking horns at this particular moment.
Let me ask you this, because residents in these English parts of Cameroon are complaining that there are kidnappings ongoing, ransoms are being collected, and that the cause, your cause, has failed.
Unfortunately, anyone who thinks that the cause has failed is merely dreaming. The cause hasn't failed. These are the consequences of war, Peter. I've emphasized that there is no good or clean war. War naturally is not a good thing. The moment you push a people to war, especially when you find they are not even, I won't call them semi-professional fighters. These are young men who have to defend themselves. They have not gone to any professional school. Imagine U.S. forces who are well-trained. They go to Iraq, Imagine the atrocities that they commit to the civilian population. These are young men who are doing whatever it takes to defend themselves. I can assure you that most of the AMBAR fighters adhere to the Geneva Convention on the issue of warfare. Unfortunately, the state, in order to, instead of looking for possibility to enter into negotiation with the fighting forces from the Southern Cameroons, instead decided to create their own forces, thinking that it would be a way to break the AMBAR resistance. Unfortunately, what that is doing at the moment is it has caused more chaos.
But you talk about self-defense by the AMBAR boys, so to speak.
Yes.
Some of the residents are saying, if this is what you are doing, why don't you carry this fight to the capital, Yaoundé, or probably to Douala, the commercial capital, where you could inflict the most damage rather than inflict this pain on the same people you say you seek to protect in these English-speaking areas?
First, let me make this very clear. It's not more than us to take this fight even to Ebola. It's not more than us. Our goal is not to conquer Cameroon. It's to force La République du Cameroon to come to the negotiating table. We can take this fight to Douala anytime, anywhere. We have sleeper cells all over the place, even in La République du Cameroon. If they just need the green light from us, and they will go operational. What we are trying to do is to free our own homeland. We are not conquerors. We are not invaders. We are not
about to invade them. Are you promising Ambazonians, if I may ask you? What are you promising them? Because elections were recently held. President Paul Biya, the incumbent president, got 71.28%, effectively an overwhelming majority to continue for the next 7 years to be in power. So what are you promising them? What is the way forward for the residents of the English-speaking areas, Ambazonians, as you call them?
Peter, the first thing is we are not interested in the elections that deals with governance in La République du Cameroon. It has nothing to do with us. And Paul Biya himself knows that. He promised to come to our homeland. He didn't dare. If he dared, we would have brought him down. Now, let me make this very clear. I have spoken time and time again that war is not a good thing. The only promise I have for the people of Ambazonia is that more difficult days are ahead.
So why should they support you?
No, let me finish. No. I can't tell them lies. There will be more difficult days ahead. But at the end of the day, the people of Ambazonia are going to be free. We are going to be free because we are fighting a just war. A just war in which it was imposed upon us. But I cannot sit there and tell the people that, no, tomorrow you will get up and schools will begin and everything will be normal.
So for nearly 2 years, children can't go to school. There has been an imposed curfew where truckloads of goods and property and students cannot board buses to move to and from school. So what do the people do now?
Peter, children not going to school and businesses being shut down and buses not being able to move around is not as important as those who have lost their lives for reasons that they did not call for. The person who imposed war in our homeland, Paul Biya, and the proconsul from France, backed by the Israelis, are responsible for the carnage in our homeland. Our people should understand one thing. Even if it's going to take the next 100 years, we want Biya and all his backers, the French and the Israelis, to know one thing. No country in the world will ever win a guerrilla warfare. If they want to fight for the next 100 years, we are ready for it. They can pick up the leaders. Some of us, they can kill some of us, but that is not going to end.
But people have expressed concern that those that you seek to protect are unprotected because their villages have been raided. Some of them have been kidnapped. Monies are being demanded before they are handed over. A case in point was, I was informed that a friend here whose mother was kidnapped, several thousands of dollars had to be exchanged in order for her to be released. And they promised that they will come back for more if their boss, so to speak, doesn't have their is not pleased with the amount of money they got. Now, there's also a report of leadership infighting among your rank and file, because you have how many groups now fighting? What is going on?
Peter, you see, it sounds a little bit funny, but it's quite serious. I wouldn't refuse that they are legitimate fighters who have taken the wrong course. They are, but the majority of those who are moving around and taking ransom from people and all whatnot are not out for independence. They are individuals who have been created by the state and they keep doing what they are doing. But one thing is certain. Our people should prepare themselves for a season of suffering before the day that they are going to see the glitter of light for freedom. If we get into this stuff, thinking that it's some sort of a political machination where you will just go in, maybe cast your vote, and someone is kicked out of office, another person is going to give congratulatory messages and take over the realm of power. No, it's not going to happen that way. The state of La République du Cameroun and all its bankers and the multinational oil firms in the world and the military industrial complex have a lot to lose with our independence. But we have to stay resolute. As concerns the issue of what you call the infighting, it is normal. This is a modern day liberation struggle where you find every individual comes up and think they have become leaders. They have a few people who follow them and they think they are leaders. Unfortunately, these are the consequences, as I said before, of war. War is never a good thing. When you impose war on an irregular forces, what about regular forces?
What do you tell folks who said enough of this going on? Life and property are being destroyed in the English parts of the country, and that accusations that some countries are backing the government are false because you don't have any proof to support that idea, and that you should just call for peace, negotiate with the government, and have things go back to normal for them to send their children to school, to live their normal life instead of being hounded, being targeted by people who claim to protect them.
Peter, Paul Biya declared this war. It wasn't declared by Dr. Akwanga or any other person. And Ambazonians, Southern Cameroonians did not declare war. Biya said he will crush us in a couple of hours. He has failed in doing that. One thing is certain, and we must come to terms with that. The reason Biya is doing all of this is because he is just a manager over that plantation called La République du Cameroun. La République du Cameroun has become a plantation for France, for China, for Israel, and other Western powers. But we have refused to become a part of that plantation cabinet, which has been going on for more than 56 years. So what our people should understand is that when you declare war, because some international organizations are talking of at the brink of a civil war. We are at a civil war is already taking place. I don't know what actually they want to declare that it's a civil war. It's just like they were killing people, murdering people in Rwanda, and they were fighting over the word genocide. No, there is a civil war that is ongoing. And if we do not recognize that there is a civil war, there will never be a solution to that particular issue.
Now, the President Paul Biya has announced recently that they will be moving the GCE board from Boya. People are saying they are losing everything and not seeing a way forward. You said you cannot promise them milk and honey in the next few years to come. What should they do?
Yes, I can't promise them milk and honey because even if we finally sit on the negotiating table and have our independence or freedom, it's going to take time for reconstruction. Our people should prepare their mind. It's going to take time. Reconstruction is not a day issue. I will not act like the leaders of the SPLA that promised heaven and earth to the people of South Sudan, and within a few days, they break into chaos. No, I will let them know that it's going to be a difficult process, whether it's going to be psychological, torture that has affected people. The entire state is going to take time, but we will overcome that. But one of the things I want our people to do is to remain resolute. We should remain resolute for the cause of freedom. And we should understand that it is not going to be easy. People have already lost their lives, and we can't let their lives be lost in vain.
So in the interim, what should they do? Because now, the students
they should recommit themselves.
Those who have children who of school-going age, who left those parts of English-speaking Cameroon to go to the Francophone side, they have passed their GCE O levels and A levels, and they are moving ahead. Those who can afford to move are remaining there, hiding in the bushes. What should they do? What is the way forward for them?
Peter, it took me 7 years, 5 years in a maximum security prison, 2 years in solitary confinement under one of the worst, abominable sets of detention that I've gone through in life. I came out of it after 7 years, escaped out of it. Partially paralyzed. Today you call me a doctor. I didn't go in there with a first degree. No. So people should keep this idea of everything we want to discuss about the struggle for independence. We talk about children not going to school. Yes, I feel for them. I really feel for them. But we have to decide which is the bigger issue. Is it freedom or education? At this particular moment, we have been educated. We've been there. We've been going to school. That's the GCE board. We fought for it. We marched on the street. It's been taken away from us. So we should be able to decide. 7 years without going to school. I was in detention. It was worse than any other thing. I thought I would lose my life. I came out. I worked extremely hard. Today, I have a doctor of philosophy degree. I've told the younger folks, my junior ones, my sons and daughters, that it is never too late to go to school. But when you are dead, because of a system that thingify or depersonalize you, you will never come back from it. When you are psychologically tortured, torture remains with you for the rest of your life. Our people should look at the bigger picture.
So what steps are you taking as a leader of the African People's Liberation Movement, or the APLM, to reach out to Yaoundé or the administration in Yaoundé to have some form of rapprochement, or you negotiate with them to end this siege on your people?
Yaoundé has made an approach. Yaoundé wants to talk. Yaoundé have started informal negotiations behind the scene. This I want our people to know. Unfortunately, when there is war, informal negotiation does not stop the warring parties from continuously fighting. We have to keep on fighting. The only thing our people need to do now is to up our game. We need to increase our exploits on the ground. We will not go on the negotiating table as the Germans, or the Japanese, or the Italians. We must go to the negotiating table with equal force so that we can sit and talk on a 50-50 basis. But if we are dragged to that negotiating table, then it is going to be La République du Cameroun that will come with a knife and the bread. So what we need to do is, people should stop complaining, especially those who are in the diaspora, and invest entirely for the cause of war. Because that is what has been imposed upon us. Every other thing we do, the APLM, we are opening an office in Accra. We have internationalized the struggle. We've opened an office in South Africa. We're opening another one in Nairobi. Because we want Africans to understand that the last colony standing is the Southern Cameroons. And the liberation of the Southern Cameroons will begin the real decolonization of the continent of Africa. Because I've sat here for quite some time, and there is problems in Africa all over, from the DRC to Malawi to Swaziland, everywhere there are constitutional crisis. Because we have managers at the helm of states in Africa rather than head of states or presidents. People who are working, they are doing the bidding of foreign powers rather than doing the bidding of their own citizens. So we need to change the course of the fate of the people of the Southern Cameroons, and therefore change the course of the people of Africa.
What convinces you that even if the Southern Cameroons become independent, people will not behave the same way that you're complaining about? What makes you confident?
That is quite interesting. Because my generation has grown tenfold older than the generations that have preceded us. We are a generation that is wiser than those who climb up the mahogany tree. We are a generation that has suffered so much but have refused to crack. We are a generation that is typical of the spirit of the African, because no other people have suffered like the African. We are the only people who have suffered, who have been taken over to a foreign land, forced to reconstruct those lands, yet refused to go to those lands. We have the spirit of the African, the spirit which we call the unbeatable spirit. That is the spirit of the African.
You spoke about the fact that Yaoundé wants to have negotiations. Why haven't you taken that step to negotiate with them?
No, I have talked of informal negotiations. All negotiations, anyone who has done conflict resolution knows that negotiations don't just start from somewhere. It begins informally. There is this behind-the-scenes discussions. But this is what I have told Yaoundé. If you want to talk to the people of the Southern Cameroons, our ears are ready. But one thing I want to assure you, we will never drop our arms. We will up our game. When you are ready to talk, you are serious that we should be able to have a Pacific settlement.
But we are
ready for it.
But who are they going to negotiate with? Because there are like 100 groups of your kind, or of your group, all over in Southern Cameroon. Some are even torturing, I understand, even their own people. So people have lost confidence in your cause to bring them freedom.
Nobody has lost confidence in our cause.
That's why they are saying your cause has failed.
That is what the international media is pumping out there, backed by La République and the rest. Nobody has lost confidence. Nobody. We said there will be no elections. Why were there no elections in our homeland? If our people lost our cause and Paul Biya has sent his troops and are controlling the land, why were they not able to organize that charade in our homeland? They couldn't, because we control the ground. Biya should understand that he has lost the Southern Cameroons. And the only way we can stop this carnage, both for our people and for his own terrorist forces, is to sit
on the negotiating table in a third country with a referee and discuss on the terms of separation. Without that, this is going to be more than 100 years of war.
Well, we'll have to continue another time. That was Dr. Ebenezer Akwanga, leader of the African People's Liberation Movement, APLM, a group seeking independence. He joined me here live. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Sudden, my body they do me. I love you. Seriously intimidating, my body calibrating. I need you. Even when you're wrong or right, I cannot be satisfied. I just wanna hold you tight and feel alright. Girl, I no regret. Even though every day we dey fight, girl, I still adore you. I still adore you. I appreciate. Since I set my eyes on you, yeah, you knock me out. You freak me out, and you knock me out. Whenever, however, anyhow, where you like me, give me, we gon' stay together forever. Our love is wide and free. Anytime, whenever, however, anyhow, where you like me, give me, we gon' stay together forever. Stay together, fight together. Look, let me realize it. God got you specially for me, but you.
Oh.
kuakapela. Oh yeah, ama piti za kumwaga. Akakapiti sindalala. Oh yeah, kajwe nevyo kapendaga. Ay, should've taken my heart away. So far away, far away. Oh, this is the code of spring. Far away, far away. I say, the way she back it on one like, yeah, yeah. Oh, ganga, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And she winding slow, yeah, yeah. Oh, bend over, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Imena wa mikono vyo vyo tetenda. Oh, give you that tender, yeah. January to December, mimi nasema. Baby napenda. Tumeshibana, meshibana, meshibana. Wana uliza na uliza na uliza. What's going on? What's going on? Eti kwa chini chini tunaibiana. Mapenzi na mahatutaki jelikana. Come on. Baby, come on. And he's taking my heart away. Far away. So far away. Mm-hmm. And he's taking my heart away. So far away. Far away.
I said, the way she back it on one like, yeah, yeah. Oh, ganga, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And she whining slow. Yeah. So sura nikitandani mino flani ya kocho 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 nikisha shuka mpike chakula chafwani wanaitaga mapocho pocho 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 sanataka nkikuse kiuno mnyeshe kate taratibu
nizidishie mawege niwe chizi mirembe. Oh, my baby, kusa.
Oh, temptation, kusa. I'm getting sensation,
kusa.
Mm-hmm.
Kusa, kusa. Mm-hmm. And he's taking my heart away,
kusa.
So far away,
kusa.
Far away.
Kusa, kusa.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, reporter Douglas Impoga, producer Saina Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Mr. Tino, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, there are many colorful flowers on the path of life, but the prettiest have the sharpest thorns. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.